This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is here. Matt Larkin, Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. We are getting ready to head to Tampa Bay in a few days, not just for the All-Star Game, but for Pirate Fest, which I'm extremely excited about. I don't know what it is, but I think it involves, I don't know, going on a pirate ship and having a couple beers or something.
I don't know. I just hope I don't get scurvy.
Boo. Boo.
What?
Boo.
I feel it's going to be very Jimmy Buffett adjacent.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
A lot of flowers. But I'm curious. I just don't know what it is.
I don't even know what it is either. I don't really care, but I am looking forward to that more than I'm looking forward to the All-Star game.
That's fair.
For sure.
I care. I care a lot. And we also care a lot, about the Edmonton Oilers' freshest hire. Paul Coffey, 56 years old, skilled development coach, no experience coaching. He coaches his son. But no experience coaching at the NHL level.
No.
No experience coaching at the AHL level. No high-end experience.
But he's not coaching, Matt.
Well, skills development coach is the title.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not...
His title is coach.
But yeah, but he's not going to be like throwing guys out on the power play and deciding who's going to take a face-off at the end of the game.
But you're jumping the gun here. I haven't even turned the corner. So the question I am going to ask is, do you guys think this is a good hire? Or do you think it's more of the glory days, old boys club, same category as, say, Kevin Lowe or Craig McTavish? Where do you fall on this?
I don't have a problem with it at all. I think Paul Coffey, I mean, if you want to hire someone to instill the importance of skills in your younger players, you can do a lot worse than Paul Coffey. And, you know, I mean, I disagree with you, Matt. He has coached, and he's coached at lower levels, and he's actually done skills coaching with kids, and I think that's really important. You know, I mean, he's been involved in minor hockey in Toronto for an awfully long time now, has coached an awful lot of kids that have gone on to become very good NHL players. I don't have a huge problem with it. I don't think it really is the old boys club in the sense of bringing back some of the guys that you talked about. He was a very, very skilled player. He's been coaching for a while. He's been working with kids. He's been developing. He's been teaching. And I think a lot of those are going to be what he's going to be doing in his new job with the Oilers.
My only question is, it's not so much with Paul Coffey's credentials as much as it is, can he skill up players who aren't built for that? You know, like, you have Connor McDavid. He's going to be fine. He's already pretty skilled. I think I'm going out on a limb there.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah,
you know,
I think you're right.
I think he might have some skill.
Yeah.
And he's pretty fast. But you can't make the rest of the Oilers fast at this point. I don't know how much skill you can instill into that lineup now. Moves obviously have to be made in that organization.
Oh, yeah.
And in that case, once these new players come in, then I think Paul Coffey can have more of an impact. So I would say in the short term, I'm not sure if he'll have what he needs to work with. But once make those changes, I think he can be a positive role model, as long as he doesn't tell them to not tie their skates like he did.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, though, that I think that he can, you know, enhance the skill of any player. Like, there's room to improve for any player, right? Like, I remember Brian McGrattan. I used to go out and see, there's a renowned skill coach in Toronto by the name of Yari Burski. You guys all know him. Yep. Steven Stamkos has worked with him, a ton of guys. Like, Brian McGrattan was going to his camps in the summer, you know, not because he had any visions of, you know, dangling and going, you know, going end to end, but he did it because he was hanging on to his career and he needed to become a player who you could actually put out there and play. And so he went to Yari for that. And, you know, results, I'm not sure what they were.
How'd that work out?
Yeah.
Actually, I have an anecdote. Like, I was at the BioSteel camp a couple summers ago, and there was McDavid was on the ice, Dylan Strome, and there was some big guy playing center dangling people. I was like, who is that guy? I looked closer and it was Brian McGrattan. Yeah. I swear.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there's always room for guys to improve. So, oh, sorry.
Did Ken burp? Ken just burped. And
it was an
like,
under. It, was
it smells
an,
like garlic.
Yeah. Oh, man. You guys are outing me big time.
I think I just like swallowed. I inhaled.
That wasn't an out Ken's loud burp, though. It was like a you know, a kind of inward burp. And I didn't really mean to do that. I had quinoa and for lunch, and sorry about that, guys. But anyways.
True story.
But anyways, I think there's room for guys to improve. I think that, you know, any other guys could benefit from having a guy like Paul Coffey, maybe. And maybe it's just something like, hey, your edging here isn't very good, or you know, or maybe you should try this or whatever. I think it's, you know, I think it's all good.
Yeah. And I look at one player specifically. I mean, who was the offensive defenseman who broke out last year and took a huge step backward this year? Oscar Klefbom, right?
Yep.
And to me, I think that's the guy that's going to benefit the most from Coffey's tutelage. Even a guy like Darnell Nurse, who had first round skill set. They're giving me a funny look at the way I said
tutelage?
The word tutelage.
Tutelage?
Do you guys not know that word?
Tutelage. Most of the rest of the world calls it tutelage.
Yeah. Is this a British thing like aluminium?
I don't know. I pronounce it right.
And Darnell Nurse is actually having a fantastic
season. Darnell Nurse has been on fuego lately.
Yeah. But developing the offensive side of his game.
He has.
And I'm also wondering if the Oilers are looking ahead in case they get Rasmus Dahlin.
Well, I was thinking the same thing,
Or sorry, Rasmus Dahlin.
Dahlin?
Yeah, there you go. I'm 0 for 2. Oh, for two. Who am I? Don Cherry?
That's okay.
Tell you right now, Rasmus Dahlin. I don't know. Can't say
I believe it's pronounced Carey. Don Carey?
Don, yeah, I think that's right.
Don Cherie.
It's Don Cherie.
Don Cherie.
Oh, this is going off
the rails. In a hurry.
Oh, my God. Like, please stick with us, okay?
Right.
People, stick with us. We'll get better.
So I think we agree that the hire is good. The only thing I'm wondering is, is it a precursor to Coffey being given a bigger role behind the bench eventually? I'm not sure. But as a skills development coach, I think it's a logical hire, sure.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that I don't get the sense that Paul Coffey would want to do that. Right. Like I think a lot of these guys are content to be, you know, guys who come in and like, he's not going to be there every day on the ice with guys every day. He's going to be like a consultant who comes in. He'll probably spend a lot of time in Bakersfield.
Yep.
He'll probably be spending most of his time in Bakersfield working with guys down there.
Yeah.
And probably traveling around and you know, maybe spending some time with Kyler Yamamoto or, you know, not that kid really needs much in the way of skill development, but some of their picks, you know, I would assume that'll be it. I don't get the sense that Paul Coffey would want to do the day in, day out grind of being an NHL coach.
And to your point, you know, they do have a couple of nice young pro defensemen, Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones. So maybe those are a couple of targets where Coffey can say, like, I was a pretty good blue liner. Here are some things you might want to consider.
For sure. It sounds very similar to the Wade Redden arrangement with Nashville, where he doesn't travel there very often. He gets to stay home for much of the year, but then he'll fly out for short
almost
periods.
Every team has guys like that now. So
exactly. if we look at the standings, I mean, among the fast starting teams, the Golden Knights continue to just go into the stratosphere. But a couple of the teams that were really fun success stories early in the year, the Los Angeles Kings have lost 6 of 7. The New Jersey Devils have lost 7 of 9. Out of those two teams, are you guys worried about one more than the other? Are you worried about both teams? Or are you worried about neither team?
I guess I would have to say I'm worried more about LA. Although I watched their game last night and I really liked what they did. They were down 2-0, came back 1-3-2, got some points from the blue line. Alex Martinez played really well. They got a lot of good efforts and Jonathan Quick was terrific. I would say, I guess I'm a little more concerned about them only because I don't think we really if anybody before the season had said that, you know, New Jersey was going to have however many points, 56 points, and they'd be in second place in the Metro Division, I think anybody would have taken that, right?
Sure.
Neither of them has a whole lot of wiggle room. That's the thing. Like, you know, I mean, LA is one spot out of the wild card. They're tied for the last wild card spot in points, and they're tied with Calgary in points for third place in their own division. So, I mean, it's all going to sort of shake down in the next couple of months. But I think with New Jersey, I think it's more just, you know, that they played a bit over their heads at the beginning, and I think they're coming back to earth right now. And there's nothing to say that they can't They can't make the playoffs. I'm no less or more concerned about them than I would be about Columbus or any other team that's kind of on that bubble as well. Mm-hmm.
I would say I'm a little more worried about the Kings simply because with the Devils, it's pretty much already established that the Atlantic's only going to have three teams in the playoffs: Tampa, Boston, Toronto. Right. So with New Jersey, you're fighting for one of five spots, and you also have to consider teams like the Rangers and Penguins. If they're faltering a little bit, you know, near the deadline, do they say like, you know what, we need to replenish, we'll be sellers this year? The Rangers in particular, with Kevin Shattenkirk going down, I think they really have to look at, you know, what their status is this year. You know, Rick Nash is an unrestricted free agent this summer. Is he kind of the rental that can get them a little more in the pipeline in return? So, and like you said, Ken, I mean, the Devils are playing with house money. If they make it, it's awesome for them, and they have so many good young players. But I still think that, you know, they can kind of maintain, and even if they slip into a wild card spot, that's okay. Whereas with LA, you're looking at the rival Central Division, which could very well send five teams, and the Pacific only sending three, and we know Vegas is going to be one of those teams.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, your margin of error is a little thinner. And, you know, I mean, they'll get Jeff Carter back, and that'll be a big, you know, sort of like free trade deadline acquisition. He'll be back soon. But I'd be a little more worried about them.
I agree. And the Devils kind of remind me of the Leafs of last year, and just that they were supposed to be bad. Their rebuild is ahead of schedule, and they're building around youth, so it's exciting. Whereas the Kings, to me, I'm actually very worried about them because they're in a strange spot where they missed the playoffs. You could almost argue it would be better for them if they were just really bad this year and could keep adding. I mean, last year they finally got a decent draft pick. They've got Gabe Vilardi. And now they're in a weird spot where they have this team that still has a lot of veterans left over from the Cup drives, the Dustin Browns, the Marian Gaboriks, the Alec Martinezes. So they're sort of in win-now mode because they have all these guys that are either approaching 30 or over 30, but they also don't have many young assets to give away, and they don't want to give away young assets. They don't want to give away first-round picks to rent somebody at the deadline, or prospects like Vilardi or Cale Clegg.
Yep.
So to me, the Kings are kind of just stuck. I think they have to just sit there and just see how the chips fall. The Devils can do that, and it doesn't matter because this year is already a success. Whereas the Kings, I don't know what to make of them, and I feel like if I'm a Kings fan, I'm a bit worried about the team's future.
Mm.
Yeah. At the other end of the standings, the bottom of the standings, I mean, the Coyotes have been there for all season. They've been, you know, almost historically bad, a little bit better of late. And it's crazy to think, just considering how bad the Coyotes were, that the Buffalo Sabres are now tied with Arizona in points. I believe the Sabres have played fewer games, but still, it's a real testament to just how disastrous the season has been for Buffalo, and with a new coach, a new GM. What do you guys think of this franchise right now? Is it okay because it's year one of Botterill and Housley? No. Or what do you do? I mean, okay, Obviously you're going to keep Jack Eichel, but what do you do with the rest of this team?
Wow.
Burn it down.
Yeah. But you know, see, the problem in Buffalo, part of the problem in Buffalo is that the culture of losing is so ingrained in this team now. Like, it really is. So now, you know, so now what do you do? Do you try and get Rasmus Dahlin? Okay, then that means you're quote-unquote tanking again this mm-hmm. year. This would be like the third tank in the last 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
you know? But the only problem is they're not even tanking. Like, they suck.
They, yeah.
They suck. This is what they are. I think you trade Evander Kane for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
See what you can get for that. I think, this is an organization that needs a reboot or something somehow. And boy, it just seems like, doesn't it just seem depressing? Like, it just,
even the interviews, like Jack Eichel and Ryan O'Reilly, like the guys that are supposed to be your leaders, they give the most depressing of the interviews, like post game sometimes.
Yeah, because they're carrying the pressure the most out of anyone. But you need a blue line upgrade. There's no question about it. You need a goaltending upgrade too.
Yeah.
They can't create offense. They can't, their defense, like, I don't think their defense, I don't think they had a goal from a defenseman in the 2017 part of the 2017-18 season.
Right.
They didn't have a single goal from a defenseman, you know, so, and the thing that I wonder, like, I see this team and like, I've watched them play and like, they don't play with a lot of structure and, Yeah, it seems messy there. Really seems messy.
Yeah. When it comes to structure, I'd be willing to give Phil Housley another year. I was actually talking to Colorado Avalanche coach Jared Bednar today in a media scrum and asking about how different his second year has been versus his first year, because obviously the Avs were horrible last year. And he was saying that, you know, this year he has a lot more trust with the players in terms of the systems he wants to play. And part of that might just be personnel. You know, the Colorado had a lot of players leave, had a lot of new ones come in. So it's just a better vibe overall. But that's what Buffalo needs to do as well. It's like you need to get rid of some of these guys, some of these veterans who, even if they have some sort of presence right now, by the time you're actually going to be good in a couple of years, they're going to be way past their prime. And I think, you know, you're right on Evander Kane. If there's any way of getting out under Kyle Okposo's long-term deal, I think you need to do that because he's already 29.
Yeah.
And I know he has a no-move clause, but I think it kicks in next year. I don't know what sort of appetite there is for Kyle Okposo at 29 right now on a long-term deal. But if you could get that sort of freedom financially, I think that's not a bad idea. Josh Georges is a UFA this summer. Obviously, you just let him walk. With Bogosian, I don't know what you do because he's always injured. He's got a couple of years left on that deal. I suppose that's kind of, in a weird way, win-win because he's either, you know, playing for you or he's on the IR and the money doesn't count towards the cap, but I don't think that's really a problem for him anyways. But, you know, Dahlin obviously would be huge because that would take a lot of pressure off of Rasmus Ristolainen, who I think has been miscast there for a couple of years now, just out of necessity. But the problem is they don't have a lot of blue line talent waiting in the wings. Brendan Goulet would be sort of the number one candidate, and I don't think he's an elite prospect. He's kind of a guy that would fit in on your second or probably more likely third pairing. And then Alex Nylander, I didn't think he was very impressive at the World Juniors, and he hasn't been very impressive in the pros.
He's got some believers to make. He's got to pick it up.
So I mean, he could be an upgrade on offense next year, but he has to earn that, and so far he has not done that. So that's kind of a problem. And that's the thing too. It's not like you can trade him right now and get good value because everybody else is at that World Juniors and they're not going to exactly be handing over prime assets for somebody that's had such a false start in the pro ranks.
I think one of the things you got to consider doing, and I think part of the problem in Buffalo has been you got to get better talent evaluators. You just got to get people who can peg talent both at the NHL level and in terms of scouting. I mean, Victor Antipin was supposed to be good. He was supposed to be really good. He's a healthy scratch half the time now on a really bad team, you know? To me, I think the one thing that the Sabres could and should do at the trade deadline or at the draft this summer is if there's one player and one team that need to sort of rid themselves of each other and need a clean new start, I think it's Sam Reinhart. I think if there's one player that needs a fresh start in the NHL more than Sam Reinhart, I'm sure there might be somebody, but you'd have to look along and hard to find him.
Griffin Reinhart.
I think what you do is you just say, okay, look, we may be trading this kid away and he may blossom somewhere else. It ain't gonna happen here. It's just for whatever reason, it's not gonna happen here, or it's very unlikely to happen here. So let's see what we can get for this guy. The only problem is you're trading him when his value is very, very low, and the potential to improve is there. But I mean, you know, at some point, and I just think you got to get people in there that can peg talent a little better than the crew that they've had.
And I will say that, you know, Jason Botterill has remade the scouting department once he came in. He's brought in some of his own guys. So this will be a crucial draft for them because they can really sort of put their stamp on the organization and really set themselves up well because we know that they're going to be picking high. So then it's just a matter of executing.
It's funny. The first time I ever interviewed Sam Reinhart was during his rookie season before he got sent back to Kootenay. But I interviewed him again like 2 months ago when I was in Buffalo doing an Evander Kane thing, and I had to look at him a couple times to make sure it was him because his face had aged so much, and I was thinking it was the stress Like, I couldn't, like, literally, Buffalo's PR staff had to be like, Sam's right there. And I said, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I knew that, but I didn't know because his face had changed so much that I didn't know it was Reinhardt. I swear to God. And I was like, oh, my God, he's really aged. And he looked, he was pretty grumpy.
He's got the weight of the world on, right?
Like, I felt bad for him.
He's a beaten man a little bit now.
For sure. And to me, I think what's happened with this Buffalo team that's really set them back is Tim Murray made a gross miscalculation of the team's trajectory when he gave the big extension to Ryan O'Reilly and when he signed Kyle Okposo. He was thinking, hey, we're on the rise. We're going to be contending in a year or two, and we're going to get these veteran guys peaking at the right time when Eichel's becoming a superstar. But it didn't work. And now, like, that Kyle Okposo contract in particular, I mean, I think O'Reilly still does enough. He has a lot of variety to his game.
Yeah.
He still helps the Sabres even when they're bad. But Okposo's had mysterious illness, injury problems. That contract, to me, that's immovable. It's like, what, 5 years left? It's $6
million? Any contract.
Fair enough, but not for a great return.
Yeah.
It's immovable for something good, let's say.
Right.
So I think it's really crippled the team, and it's kind of it reminds me of what's happened in Detroit, where they're buried under these bad contracts, and they're just kind of stuck because no one wants the contracts, right? So it's going to be a long road back.
And we should say, the one X factor next year will be Casey Mittelstadt.
Right.
Absolutely.
If he comes out of the University of Minnesota, he could have a big impact on the forward core. You can line him up at center, or you can put him on the wing. Maybe see what he can do with Eichel just for a little super
line.
Did
you not look at the questions? Did you not look at the reader questions?
No, Ken's wrong on this one.
Oh, I am?
Ken's wrong. We had a reader question about Buffalo, and we said, hey, no worries. We're going to be talking about Buffalo anyways.
Oh, we did. I didn't hear that.
Boom. Boom.
Did we say that?
Maybe you were in the bathroom.
I think I was. Okay. Okay. So, yes. Okay. So, yeah. Now let's talk about Casey Mittelstadt. So then he comes in, right, as a rookie. I think that I don't like it when guys play out of position as soon as they come into the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him play center. So then you've got Ryan O'Reilly, you've got Jack Eichel, and you've got Casey Mittelstadt. Which two of those three would you like to have long term the most?
Eichel and Mittelstadt, right? Yeah.
So what do you do with Ryan O'Reilly? Maybe he's the guy that goes.
Yeah, maybe. Because even though he's got a high price tag, he does have a skill set that a lot of teams could use. Just the two-way guy
who
can do a bit of everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. But would you not rather have all three? Because Mittelstadt's going to be on his entry-level deal. Eichel's extension kicks in, so it'll be the big ticket there. But would you rather not have either O'Reilly in a pure shutdown role as like an awesome third liner, or you have Mittelstadt in the sort of like Austin Matthews rookie role where technically he's the third line center, but
yeah, that's
he's
what
driving
you
offense.
Yeah. And because if you do put him in that role, you're setting him up for success.
Yeah.
Because he's getting the easier matchups.
Exactly.
He's getting sheltered a little more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
But I mean, long term, I'm thinking sort of.
Sure,
long-term.
Sure. Yeah, long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough. This weekend at the All-Star game, we are going to be subjected to it, whether we want to hear it or not. Kid Rock will be performing. It's caused a lot of tension, at least on social media. A guy who, as far as I know, has flown the Confederate flag proudly. The NHL trying to launch its Hockey is for Everyone campaign, but at the same time, they are selecting someone who flies the Confederate flag performer.
And says F. Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. So, I don't know. How do you guys feel? I mean, I guess I've been vocal about it on Twitter. I think it's just really, I'm not saying the NHL is racist, but the NHL is just so tone deaf when it comes
really
to
are.
Social issues.
Mm-hmm. Really,
and every time they do something good, they seem to just take a step backward with just a dumb decision like this one. It bothers me. I don't know. What do you guys
think? Yeah, it
bothers
me too. And I really think I wonder if the NHL just doesn't every once in a while just want to troll people and say F you, you know, and say we're the outliers, we're different, you know, we're going to do things our way.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Is it Shaka Khan? Was that the awards a few years ago? They had Shaka Khan and Robin Thicke before he was decent. So, I mean, you know, like you look at the NBA and who do they have? They have like, you know, they have like all these huge mega, you know, mega stars. You know, the Super Bowl has, who's doing the Super Bowl show this week?
Pink or something? Or she's doing, no, Pink's doing the national anthem.
Yeah.
I don't remember who's doing the.
Somebody really good.
We're not cool. Sorry,
you know,
everybody.
And then hockey gets, you know, Kid Rock.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just stale.
Seriously?
And,
seriously?
It's strange because sometimes they'll get good acts, but then they'll default. Like, I mean, like the Hives played at the All-Star game years ago, and that was pretty cool. And I know that, like, Flo Rida is involved with the All-Star game this year in Tampa, and that's somebody who's still producing hit music in the hip-hop community. Like, he's still, you know, sort of on top of his game. So, like, that makes sense both locally. I assume he's from Florida. so it makes sense from a local angle and from a sort of relevance angle. And don't forget, I mean, when the game was in Ottawa, when the All-Star game was in Ottawa, they had Drake. And there was actually, I would say, like, a third of the players actually skated back out for the intermission to be on the ice to watch Drake up close and personal. Now, are we going to see anybody skate out to watch Kid Rock?
Oh, yeah, because they're all bros. All hockey players are bros. Oh, yeah, they'll all be out there.
I don't know.
I don't know. I think that's a big question is, like, who's coming out to see Kid Rock? Like, are you selling tickets to see Kid Rock? Like, are there people, the corporate folk that this All-Star game is for, the Schmooze Fest, are they like, Kid Rock. Oh, okay. I'll put down my chicken fingers for that.
The best way I can describe it is it's a bad look. And we recently completed our Top 100 People of Power issue, and we had a main cover spread that had the images of all the faces. And, you know, we're trying to reflect it as accurately as possible. And unfortunately, you look at that image, and it was probably, 80% very wealthy, privileged white men. And that's what Kid Rock speaks to. That's what the NHL represents more than the other major pro sports. Mm-hmm. It's the league of the privileged white dudes. Mm. And it's just a bad look. It's like it doesn't, for a sport that's claiming to want to grow the game and include, hockey is for everyone. That's the slogan, right?
Yeah.
It's not
speaking. Yeah, the mission statement. Remember the principles.
Yes.
Yeah, this was all these guiding principles and everything like that. This is a airy fairy kind of thing that was out there that kind of nobody really understood.
It contradicts
so much of that, and like I said, I just think it's the NHL, right from everything they do, saying screw you, we're the outlier, we're going to be the way we want to be, we have our fan base, and we're going to continue to cultivate that fan base.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess so. Time for some reader questions now. First one from pretty cool name, Crash Leafington.
Mm.
I'm sure that's the real name of this person.
For sure.
Imagine in school. Crash Leafington here. What's one major rule change that you think we'll see in the next year or two?
I think the one that's sort of ripe for the picking right now is the offside rule.
Sure.
And the breaking, that in terms of breaking the plane, if your skate's up on the ice and you're breaking the plane of the blue line. Because the NHL, you know, they got to screw it up somehow. They've got to make it more complicated. And I love how people think this is gonna solve the problem. Yeah, okay, so now we're going to be looking to see if, you know, now instead of looking to see if the guy's DNA was over the blue line, we're going to see if, you know, he lifted his skate a centimeter over the blue line. It's offside. If it's offside, it's offside. Even if it's by, a hair, it's still offside. I'm okay with the rule the way it is, but I can see that one, you know, people just, you know, getting all over that and maybe that being the next one.
Yeah, just let the refs call it.
Yeah.
Forget the replay on offside. Yeah. Just let the refs call it.
Yeah.
They're never that wrong.
Yeah.
No,
really.
Yeah.
The one I am wondering about is the trapezoid for goalies. I feel like it's been adapted to so well that it's almost irrelevant. Like, when was the last time a goalie actually got called for a trapezoid penalty?
Yeah.
I think that's the sort of thing where I think we should realize at this point that it's not like the trap era where goalies were just winging it out and killing momentum. Now you're seeing goalies get the puck in a good position for a mobile defenseman to break it out and create. So I don't think it would stifle offense at all if you let the goalies control the puck more. And on the flip side of it, some goalies are still bad at controlling the puck, and that's hilarious.
That's a good thing.
And that leads to goals, and we're always looking at ways to increase offense in the NHL, so that would be one I'd look at.
I think it's going to be the offside. I was actually talking to Ray Shiro last week about that, and he was saying he thinks that when it's next time for the competition committee to meet, that's absolutely going to be offside change is going to be on the agenda. I would like to see just no offside at all. I'd like to just get rid of the rule. way more offense. If you want to take your chance and cherry pick, then you'll risk giving up a chance the other way. Odd man rush. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Why not? Mm-hmm. And people say it flies in the face of the rules, but there also used to be no forward passes allowed, and we changed that as well. Right. Next question. Let's go to Boltman 92 with a lightning bolt. You can guess who Boltman cheers for. Do the Lightning make a move to strengthen the team, or do they let their deep farm help the NHL club? Maybe I'll take this one first, because I was actually talking to somebody about it recently. To me, Tampa's got so much young talent on the roster right now. Vasilevsky's probably the Vezina front runner. Kucherov is still young. Braden Point's young. Sergachev is young. This team is ready to win now. It's still arguably, even though Vegas passed them, I think the Lightning are the best team in the NHL. So I think now is the time. You have enough youth and you can sustain that on your roster. You did. Yzerman worked out a lot of his tough contracts by trading away Drouin and trading away Ben Bishop. You're in your window. I think now what you do is you can trade from your farm system. So you can dangle a Taylor Radish if it can get you a Mike Green.
Exactly. Those guys. And they've got a ton.
Right. They're deep.
And typically what you want is a right shot defenseman on that team to bolster the depth, the top four right shot defenseman. And so, yeah, I mean, this is why you do this. This is why you build up your minor pro system. This is why you build up with draft picks and you keep your draft picks and everything. This is the situation you're doing it for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guys that you've already picked, the young ones are already up, already contributing, already making a major, you know, sort of contribution to the effort. And now you're one of the best teams and you want to go get over the top. I would say for sure that would be something that they'd have to definitely look at doing. And going for a right shot defenseman, I think, would be the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting too, because we're already seeing some of that come into play, where when Victor Hedman went down, Slater Koekkoek finally gets his shot at regular duty again with the club. And it's nice to have that luxury of a player who on a lot of other teams would already be playing regular minutes. Now he's going to come in there and he's going to want to prove himself and try to solidify his place in that lineup, even if it's only temporary. And you're right. I mean, they have the assets that they can dangle. And the good thing is they have guys at different positions where, you know, even if they make a big trade, there's still going to be the next guy in line. So if you trade Anthony Cirelli, you still have Mitchell Stevens and Taylor Radish, for that matter, if you trade him. You know, in terms of defensemen, Libor Hájek is a guy they're very high on. He's still in junior, so, you know, he's got a couple of years before he makes an impact. But again, there's another defenseman, and you already have Sergachev, who's just beginning his fine NHL career. So they're in very good shape in that regard.
I would also like to see them go big for a luxury upgrade at backup goalie. I know, like, Peter Budaj, people forget, yes, he had a great year last year, but that was a major anomaly. Like, he was almost out of hockey altogether. At least it felt like he was never going to be back in the NHL, I think, before last year. And they've got Louis Domingue. I don't know how to say his name. I've never said it out loud before. They brought him in, but I still think...
Just pronounce it.
It's the Louis guy. Yeah. There you go. Lou D. But to me, because your team is so stacked already, I think Steve Yzerman has the luxury of... You could go for a guy like Mike Condon, who's going to cost a little bit more. He's $2.5 million.
And for 2 more years.
For 2 more years. Yeah. But you know, like, Andre Vasilevsky has, I think he's given up 4 more goals in 5 games in a row. So last year, and he's been prone to that in his career. He's super talented, but he goes in these horrible slumps. And I think he's also probably getting tired because he's never had a workload this big.
Right.
So to me, because you know you can win the cup this year, you're in a great window, I don't think you want to mess around with that. I think you want someone who can legitimately spell Vasilevsky and be relied upon as a high-end backup goalie. I don't know. My two cents. One more question. This one's from Marco Pelletier. Will Max Pacioretty get traded before the trade deadline? If so, will it be to St. Louis?
I'm going to say no, because I feel like Marc Bergevin is the type of guy that even though he's pulled the trigger on some big deals, he doesn't seem to be the kind of guy that necessarily rushes, particularly at the trade deadline. And I think because of that, he'll probably hold on to his captain.
Yeah, I would think that this one's a big one, so I would think it gets done at the draft.
Yeah.
If at any time. And it will, and it probably will. And if I'm Montreal's ownership, I'm like, No, I think we're good. I don't think we want you making this trade at the deadline and you know, dictating the future of our team, because you might not be part of it.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, also, if you're Bergerman, if you're making that trade, you're admitting, I blew it.
Yeah.
You can fire me now because I'm kickstarting a rebuild. That would be the first trade, the first domino in a Habs rebuild, I guess, right?
Right, yeah.
But it's, I don't know what it is. I have this gut feeling that it's going to happen just because Pacioretty, I think, is the best forward who's even remotely available. And I have this feeling some team's going to come with a big offer. It's similar to Duchesne. He has 1 year left, but he's cheaper than Duchesne. $4.5 million. Like,
yeah.
It's wow. Very it's appealing.
It's a hugely, hugely team-friendly contract.
Yeah, and he's heating up. I think he's got, what, like five goals in his last five games, something like that. Yeah. Not exactly that, but I don't know. I feel like some team's going to come forward and make that big move. I don't know why. I have no reason.
Yeah.
There's no inside scoop, nothing like that, just a gut feeling.
Well, would it be a St. Louis?
I think St. Louis is a team that could go for it. Yeah. I think their forward core is not deep enough. They have some good, I'd say, B+, A- type prospects, right? Your Clem Costins, your Tage Thompsons.
Yep.
So I do think they can spare a guy like that. They also have really good depth on defense, like Vince Dunn, Jake Wallman, and Jordan Schmaltz, all similar guys, similar skill sets, puck movers. One of them made the team, so maybe you can spare one of them. So I don't know. I think St. Louis would be a pretty good fit for Pacioretty, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. Well, enjoy the All-Star game. We will try, but we may tune out Kid Rock, and we suggest that you do as well.